Radio Escena. It is the year of our Lord 2008. Month would be August. Day would be 5. Probably stepped on a worm. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff today. Let's check our sound levels here. Let's see. Where are we? I see the green levels are not exactly jumping, so I may up it a little bit here. And I'm trying something a little bit different today, recording myself at 32 kilobits. We have a couple different people taping it, I think, so we'll see how it turns out. Anyway, we'll talk about a number of different things today. And let's see here. Let's see how this goes. All right, how's this for volume? A little better. I've got the sound up. It's still not really high enough. I'm going to have to raise the master volume again. I'm not seeing the Simplecast is not working that. For some reason, the charts on it are not working particularly well. All right. I'm going to trust that that's okay for right now. Let's see. Okay, I jacked the master volume up far beyond what I've had it before. I'm not sure what the deal is, but... I'm taping it myself via SoundCapture is a good free program if you want to try to record this kind of thing. I'm recording it at 32 kilobits. That's a pretty low volume. And I didn't notice the quality when I was testing it last night. I didn't notice any significant drop in quality from 128. And like I said, I'm not going to be playing music. I'm just going to be talking straight through. So I got to say, I'm a little bit groggy today. While I was getting my stuff together for the rest of the Elijah Lovejoy store and the rest of it, I someone sent me a link to the Google digitalization. What they've done is they put a whole bunch of old books online, and they're digitized, and you can read them online. And one of them is the book I mentioned, Usher Linder's Reminiscences of the Early Life, or his reminiscences of the early bar in Illinois back in the 1830s and 40s, and it's just that, a bunch of reminiscences of the different people he knew. The famous would have been Lincoln and Stephen Douglas and a whole lot of other people below that. And so I was reading through that, just thinking what a different era it was. Back then, I mean, it was the ordinary matters of life and death were dealt with by average people. And you had these lawyers riding the bar or riding the circuit, and they would basically, you know, take their horses and ride off and stay with somebody in a small town, and they would even sleep in the same bed, you know, they'd sleep on the floor, it was kind of an old boys club. They all knew each other, they knew the judge, and you know, they'd find some guy guilty, and you know, they'd send him out to a tree and flog him, or they would just hang him within a month. It was just white civilization. There wasn't this whole level of abusive terms and these words that don't really reflect anything. They're just meant to manipulate you, and you know, you didn't have to have a master's degree in chemistry and a license to be able to buy termite poison. You know, you could do what worked. It was still basically a free time because you had to rely on yourself. You didn't have all the consumer goods we have today. You had to in some ways it was better than what we have today, where everything is taken out of your hands, all serious decisions are made by someone thousands of miles away, and you know, you're allowed to do whatever they say you're allowed to do, and you're encouraged to trust experts. I don't think that's really it doesn't make for adults. It makes for children, and that's, I think, reflected in what you see in the TV advertising. You know, people are supposed to be going to bars and acting like juveniles when they're 40. I mean, it's reflected in the Budweiser ads. It's reflected in movies made by people like Will Ferrell. And, all right, I'm going to trust this is going through, because from what I'm seeing, it's encoded and it's streaming, but it's also, I'm not seeing the chart showing the decibel level react in the way they normally do. So if you're not hearing me, let me know. Anyway, we had some reaction to last show, which was our pickup show, number 18, after being off for a few months. This would be number 19, Radio Estina. Somebody told me to tell you what that means at the start of each show. Well, said it many times, but Estina is the counterpart, the opposite of Pravda. Pravda is the ideological truth, which is another way of saying a big lie. You may remember the Russian paper called Pravda. Estina is the opposite in Russian. It's the reality, the truth, the street truth, the straight truth. That's what we try to bring you here, is the factual reality of things that are misrepresented in the mainstream media. And I don't mean 80% of the time. I mean 100% of the time. That's what we're going to talk about today. Now, in our years of bringing you this kind of material, we've come across some good people along the way. And one of the real pleasures, I can't stand when people say, is a national treasure, this guy. But one of the people who writes some of the best stuff out there, kind of person who ought to be reading or writing our papers, goes under the name N.B. Forrest. And he wrote a letter in response to, number 18. And I had that plugged up here. Where is it? And this is at govnn.com. And all these shows are archived, of course. But in the comment section, he leaves a message. I'm just going to read it to you. Let's see. He says, "A fine fire N.B. Forrest again. A fine fireside chat in relation to Radio Estina number 18. I could see you in your cardigan sitting before the crackling hearth, mummified falla curled at your feet." Maybe I'm mispronouncing falla, but that's FDR's dog. I guess to him I sounded like I was doing a fireside chat, but believe me, it's far too hot in Missouri this time of year. We're in the dog days, and the weather Missouri is famous for extreme humidity. And actually, it's not as nearly as bad here as it is very, very often down south. But it's plenty bad in the worst weeks. Anyway, he says, "Yeah, before we had Jews, the goddamn Yank Puritan scum filled the cancerous function before the tapers herded onto Ellis Island and finished the job. The Beechers, the Stowes, Charles Sumner, Ben Wade, Emerson, Whitman, Thoreau, the loathsome Thaddeus Stevens, those insufferable, self-righteous ass-loaves were the ones who caused the great racial catastrophe that was the Civil War. It's all been downhill from there. Their bloviation about free speech was just an expedient, one that they, of course, shit-canned once they took power. And in spite of all the flowery fertilizer they spread around, that's all it's about, raw power. You don't like unfair hate crime laws, eh? Don't want your kids forced into shitty schools with hyper-violent gang turdlets? And you hate that the Supreme Whores overturned Loving versus Virginia, which led to all these MTV snow hoes pushing pickaninny-filled strollers down your streets? Yeah, well, we got control of the Fed, bully boy tool, so tough titty. Ha ha, power is all, and power when the political media system is totally yanked-jewed against you as it is against us is acquired only through violent action. The talk we're engaged in now is only to inform and to enrage the unfocused white pissed, stocking their mental armories in preparation for that action." And that is a good summary of what we talked about last time. We were talking about my ancestor, Usher Linder, and we were talking about Lovejoy, who is a Maine troublemaker who came out to Illinois to stir up the blacks and incite them to violence. And he achieved that in the form of one Frank McIntosh, who killed a cop and injured another and was subsequently brought to justice, brought to hot private justice. And, of course, the same thing ended up happening to Lovejoy himself. Now, Linder does not go into that in his reminiscences much, other than to praise someone who said that he was not responsible for Lovejoy's being lynched. He had tried to talk people out of violence and was out of town when the actual death of Lovejoy took place. And as we said, and as Forrest mentions or alludes to, Lovejoy is now considered a free speech martyr, and to the extent he's remembered, free speech awards are given in his name by colleges that employ speech codes, and of course they don't see any hypocrisy there, because as he says, it was just an expedient. They used the free speech that was legally theirs to gain power, and at that point they got rid of it, because free speech is not their principle. And I've said before, I've talked about this mentality, and apart from we can analyze it, we can discuss it, but if you want to see a visual representation, you've got to watch the movie Ride with the Devil, and there's a great scene in there I've talked about a couple of times, and the man describes the Northerners, and he says the first thing they do when they start a new town is they build a public school, and they get everybody's daughter and son in there. And why is that? He's like, because everybody has to think the same way they do. And that's why we're going to lose the war, because we don't think like that. And that's the true, even to call it, people say Celtic or Southern, Jimmy Cantrell does. That's the American mentality. That was the mentality of the people who set up America. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of the people who were involved at the founding of America had the other mentality. This is the Yankee Puritan mentality. And that side came to dominate, and the lynching of Lovejoy really got the ball rolling, and it inflamed the people back east, the Beechers, Stowes, Wards, you know, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin, and their side won, and we paid the price ever since. Or, you know, if you're a Jew or a neocon or a Yankee Puritan, you say, oh, we went on to better things, we're liberating all these people. But I've got the quote from Burke, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. It'll kind of go talk a little more about what we talked about last time. All right. Someone was telling me our sound's messed up. Another person's telling me it sounds fine, so I'm gonna go with it. Sounds fine. Let's see here. I was a little bit worried that my recording it would affect the quality of it, but I don't think that it will. But anyway, I wanted to read and praise NB Forrest for that letter, and I wanted to thank all of you who write in and give me some feedback on this. I really appreciate any reaction. I see that people were reacting to my bagpipe story. Yeah, don't. These are just stories. They're not intended to inflame anyone. If I have a point to make, I'll make it about any particular ethnic group. And I do actually have Scottish blood myself, but I just still don't like bagpipes. I've never had haggis or haggis. But now, there was something I was going to say about the kilt. But I don't have the article in front of me. But essentially, it's one of these sort of pseudo-nationalist things that they didn't actually wear. It was some guy plucked some small aspect up. But I'll talk more about that when I've got the article in front of me. It was at lewrockwell.com a few weeks ago. Some person trying to stimulate Scottish nationalism essentially created it out of whole cloth, which is an appropriate figure for a skirt created out of cloth. Let's see now. Well, anyway, if you have any reaction, these are always archived at govnn.com, and they're also archived at vnnforum.com with the MP3, and you can leave any kind of reaction you have there, or you can email it to me at alinder5@gmail.com. That's kind of my new main address, and I'm going to get rid of eventually alinder@kvmo.net. So, alinder5@gmail.com. And let's see here. Where's the... I think what we'll do, we'll start off... I don't want to talk too much about Jones today, but I want to talk a little bit about just a page or two out of his book. And people have told me that he's a little more open to some of the racial facts about Jews, as he shows later on. And truly, the bulk of this book concerns the 20th century. But right now, we're dealing with the part I've read is only up through the getting into the Middle Ages. And what he appears to have done is take this history that up until now has only been written about one-sidedly. The Jews have written the history of Jewish-Catholic relations. This is interesting. I'm going to talk about Jones describing kind of the Catholic Church as becoming aware of the Talmud. What we said last time was Jones's contention is that the Church's objection to Jews is religious and spiritual rather than racial. So they're not racist. They're not anti-Semitic. And Jones seems to adopt those Jewish terms without having a problem with them, and defends the Church in that way. But his point is that they became Jews when they rejected Jesus. And when they rejected Jesus, they essentially turned over their traditions to the people who are now known as Catholics. And they became very stubborn and carnal and prideful and all the other bad things that we know them as today. And what they did was become a religion of rabbis. And the rabbi sat around and engaged in pill-pull or hair-splitting debate, and they came up with these laws and these code books and these eternal discussions. That came to be called the Talmud. And these crystallized in the 100 years or so before Rome's final overthrow by the Goths. In around 510 or so. And for the next 1,000 years, the Jews, having revolted numerous times and been put down by Rome, they kind of went inside themselves and went into their own communities, and they kind of congealed as this particular people, and then they erupted after. They erupted in the Middle Ages, and then being freed by Napoleon and turned into citizens rather than hateful, hostile outsiders. They became just people with an alternative religion, and much misery was to result from that. And okay, let's see. All right, let's see here. Sorry about this being a little bit slow. We're trying to get an optimal way worked out of recording this and archiving it, and I'm not sure if our regular archivist is not around as much, so I'm not sure he's recording it today, but I am, and I tested it last night, and it seemed to work, and we're going to have even an alternative solution, but anyway, it's got me a little distracted. But let's look at some of what Jones is saying. And the church comes to wake up to the truth about what is in the Talmud. Now, I guess for 800 years it didn't pay much attention to it. But Jones says that crusade began in 1236 when Nicholas Donin, an apostate Jew who had become a Christian and a Dominican, was granted an audience with Pope Gregory the Ninth. Donin called the Pope's attention to the blasphemies in the collection of Hebrew writings known as the Talmud. Let's see here. Donin's, okay, again, this D-O-N-I-N, this is a Jew who converts to Christianity, and remember that the Catholic, the whole Catholic thing is we just have to convert these Jews. Now, they've never really succeeded in doing it en masse, but they had, you know, they had different monks studying Hebrew and trying to learn up on the Jewish stuff so that they could kind of meet them halfway and lead them back to the right path. So I guess they had some periods where they were able to convert more than others, but never were they able to convert the bulk of Jews. But anyway, Nicholas Donin, 1236, calls the Pope's attentions to the blasphemies in the collection of Hebrew writings known as the Talmud, which is, you know, the law and all the commentary on it. Donin's outspoken opinions had caused his expulsion from the synagogue 11 years earlier, so revenge may have been a motive, but Donin took with him an acute understanding of the role the Talmud played in Jewish life. It was, as Gretz claimed, G-R-A-E-T-Z, this is one of the main Jew historians of like the 19th century, the 1800s. And anytime you read something about Jews by a Christian writer, they usually cite him quite a bit. So what Jones is doing here is kind of giving you a Christian or a Catholic, specifically Catholic, interpretation of interreligion relations that until now have mainly been written about by Jews, and they've got their view out, which is that, you know, the Catholic Church is the worst source of anti-Semitism until the Nazis, and they're responsible for feeding all these bad ideas about Jews. Well, Jones is giving you the real truth about this. And the real truth is, what was the actual Catholic doctrine as opposed to what the Jews say it was? How did they actually treat Jews? So, and here he goes into stuff that white nationalists have long said, although Jones never cites white nationalists that I've ever seen, other than to point out how their position is not the same as his. But first place I ever heard of any of this was not from Catholics, it was certainly from white nationalists. He says it was not, as Gretz claimed, the main they're talking about the role of the Talmud in Jewish life. It was, as Gretz claimed, the mainstay of Jewish civilization, right? Not the Torah, the Talmud, not the Old Testament, this book of commentary that basically advocates the reverse of what's advocated in the Torah. It was also full of blasphemies, claiming, among other things, that Christ was being cooked in boiling excrement in hell, and that he was the illegitimate son of a Roman soldier and a whore named Mary. The Jewish Encyclopedia, for example, discussing Celsus's debt to Judaism, remarks that, quote, he asserts that Jesus was the illegitimate son of a certain Panthera, and again he had been a servant in Egypt, not when a child, as according to the New Testament, but when he was grown, and there he learned the secret art. These statements are frequently identical with those of the Talmud. According to another source, the Jews call Christ the illegitimate son of a whore and the Blessed Virgin Mary, an abominable thing to say or even think, a woman of heat or lust, and they curse both and the Roman faith and all its members and believers. So anyone who thinks that Judaism is a religion like these, like other religions, doesn't grasp it. And this is what the church was coming to see in 1200, and apparently in that gap from the destruction of the failed attempt to build the second temple, which failed because God wouldn't allow it to be built, according to Jones and according to people at the time. They attributed they tried to build it, and they say that supernatural causes prevented it from being built. That was in 70 AD, and again, this is after Jesus, and during this time, slowly over the centuries, up till about 500, they're formulating what becomes the Talmud, whereas the Christians are formulating their faith and how they're going to, and among other things, how they're going to deal with other religions. But you've got Romans, you've got Christians, you've got Jews. They're all kind of fighting and struggling to see who's going to come out on top. Finally, a Roman adopts Christianity as the state religion, and that helps Christianity get the upper hand to an extent. But let's see here. Where is it? Okay. Well, let's see. I'm going to talk a little louder and see if that shows. I don't know. For some reason, the decibel charts on this are simply not acting correctly. I don't know if I just have too many windows open or what. But as far as I know, people are able to hear, so I will continue. Now, let's see. And I'm quoting from page 118 of Jones's book, which is 1,200 pages long. Okay, now this is interesting. According to Jones, he says, before Donin, before this guy Nicholas Donin in 1236, the Talmud was virtually unknown among Christians, who, like Pope Gregory IX, labored under the illusion that the Jews merely followed the Torah, books which Catholics also considered canonical. That would be the Old Testament. As a result of these discoveries, that quote, the campaign against the Talmud is the beginning of the change in the Church's attitude toward the Jews. Cohen's proposed dichotomy in Christian teaching on the Jews doesn't exist. Sicut Judaeus known, which is the Church's policy towards Jews, never changed from the time of St. Gregory the Great to the time of the mendicants. What changed was the Church's understanding of the Jews. They were, in the eyes of the Church, transformed from essentially blind followers of a perversely understood Torah to social revolutionaries, largely as a result of the discovery of the Talmud and its blasphemies. So again, just as if you go into a bookstore, you're not going to find the Talmud on the shelves, whereas you will find the Book of Mormon, the Bible, the Quran, and every other true religious book. The Torah was something the Jews kept to themselves because it's so hostile, to use one word. You could say shameful. It's nothing but animadversions against non-Jews, talking about them as animals and denouncing their gods and talking about them as creatures who only exist to serve the Jews. So naturally they hid this away. And Jones is claiming that the Church really didn't become aware of that for 700 or 800 years. They saw the Jews as basically just blind to the truth, and it was their duty to convert them, but they didn't realize how fully and deeply the Jews hated all non-Jews until this Jewish apostate, this convert Nicholas Donin, told them about the Talmud. Again, you know, I'm not a religious scholar. I don't know the truth. But I found Jones generally reliable, and what he says is in line with what Kevin MacDonald says and with what the Jew come Christian Israel Shahak says in, what's his book, 3,000 Years of History, something like that. He says the same thing, that the Talmud that was, it went from the Jerusalem Torah to the Babylonian Talmud, and the commentary came to dominate, and the people are locked up by their rabbis. Hoffman and Jones's big point is that the Jews are controlled by their rabbis. The rabbis tell them what they're going to think and do, and the rabbis like anti-Semitism because it makes the Jews cohere and stick together and see themselves against the world. Otherwise, if they quit hating the outside world, they might blend into it and disappear. So they need people who are hostile to them. I don't believe that view. I believe there's something deeper and genetic about the Jews. I believe they probably began as a subset of people who were on the far end of the bell curve of obnoxiousness, as that runs in humans, and somehow they hit upon a code justifying that and providing them with commercial success. And I think that's how it grew, along with all this other stuff. But there's certainly more than simply behavior, and how Jones is able to separate behavior from being in essence. I mean, if you act like something for 2,000 years, that's how you are. I mean, at a certain point, it's not a choice anymore. That's what you are and what you do. And that's just how people work. see. Now I'm getting mixed messages about whether whether it's rebuffering, whether it's listenable or not, or whether it's having all kinds of problems with buffering. We're closing down everything I can close down. Let's see. Let's see here. All right, what I'm going to do is go to the end of this bit talking about the Talmud, and then I'm going to stop, and I'm going to check the recording to make sure if it's going okay, see if I can tell, so that if it's garbled going out, at least it works on the back end. Okay, anyway, let's see here. Now, all right. See here. Anyway, sorry about this, people. I'm trying to see if the damn thing is working right, and I can't seem to get the volume right or figure out why the goddamn volume is so low in this. Anyway, what I'm going to do is stop right here and listen to what I've recorded so far and see how that works, and then I will come right back. So I'll be back within about 2 minutes. I'll stop right now.